Hi. Change of focus. We've just talked about big, big EU funding for large projects. We are Marie and Marie from Prototype Fund, and we're here to talking about small innovation funding. There's this trend of infrastructure and maintenance, which is like super great, and we're not questioning this at all. The context is that funders, they really like shiny things they can show, and we remember maybe 10 years ago, everyone wanted to like start funding their own apps, their own platforms, whatever. And in the last years, people have been saying this is not good, we need to care about maintenance, we need to care about infrastructure, we can't keep producing new stuff for the software graveyard. And that's how stuff like the Sovereign Tech Fund or Sovereign Tech Agency was funded, how other funders that were not even in tech started writing reports about roads and bridges. Open Tech Fund in the US started doing more infrastructure maintenance stuff. And no question about that, that's just not our topic today. The reason we're here about today is to talk about funding innovation and small projects, because infrastructure being important, maintenance being important, doesn't mean that we should stop caring about setting up new structures and better structures to fund innovative ideas. Innovation is often seen as a bit problematic in our communities, rightfully, because there has been this software graveyard production. But today I want to go a bit into why it's still important and how we can do this better. Yours.
Thanks. So one reason is, of course, that every project starts small. Someday someone said, we need an open source software ticketing platform, and they build it. And now you probably all have used Pretix to buy conference tickets. Someday someone said, we need a data secure period tracking app, so that one that doesn't misuse people's data, and they build it. Someday someone said Sea-Watch needs software to coordinate their missions, and they build it. And these projects only exist because people had the ideas and they got the financial support to work on those ideas. Another reason is that we want the free and open source software community in the field to be more diverse, and we want people from different backgrounds to be able to work on their ideas. So starting a project often requires a lot of resources, mostly time, of course, but also having a network, knowing people who have the expertise, who can support them with specific tasks, having the money to bring in, to cover expenses like server costs or, I don't know, creating a logo. And people who come from a more privileged background often have these kind of resources and have these kind of networks. And sometimes even have the ability to live off their savings to work on a project for 6 months. But not everyone does.
Another reason is because the expertise is not only in companies that have capacities for research and development to fund new ideas. People have ideas because they navigate communities that have specific needs, because maybe they themselves have specific needs, because they volunteer, because they acquire knowledge in niches that are not relevant to companies. And if we just let companies fund innovation, we won't get that. Examples from our funding experiences, for example, a cancer patient knows better what health tracking app they need than a software company who's thinking there is a business there. Or someone who teaches German in a school to migrants knows better what tools will be helpful for them to learn the language than Duolingo, which like doesn't work for anyone anyway. Or to get back to Sea-Watch, only people who have actually been on these boats on the ground know what software is needed there. There can't be a company that's just like going to figure out what they need. And these people, they don't only know what is needed, they also are mostly the first who know this is needed now. So in the pandemic in 2020, one example is that we saw many tools that emerged from civil society that were there for people to connect with each other, like all these tool calls, all these platforms that were like trying to find new ways to connect with each other, do calls in a better way than Zoom. Nobody urgently needed some like blockchain, Web3, whatever thing. Like, that's not the applications we got as funders. They wanted these stable calls. They wanted to be able to talk to their grandma who was in isolation. They wanted people who were maybe not super power users of open source tools to be able to use these privacy protecting tools. They wanted to be able to work remotely correctly and still use free and open source software. And they wanted to not risk their health by having to go places. And that's the kind of stuff we saw. People didn't follow the trends that were like set by agencies, companies, governments. And without these alternatives to tech giants like BigBlueButton, Jitsi, Nextcloud, and co, which we relied on a lot as communities, I won't go into why this is important, because like tech giants being shit, it's like everywhere at FOSDEM, but like that's also a thing.
Yeah, so now that we've gone over this, why this type of funding is so important, and before we go into it, how to make it work and to share our suggestions with you to fund small early stage projects, we want to give you a bit of context who we are and where we come from and why we have learned about these things. So we both work at Prototype Fund, which is a German free and open source fund. It's a project by the Open Knowledge Foundation Germany, and it's funded by the Federal Ministry for Education and Research in Germany. In a nutshell, we have funding periods of 6 months. We had 16 rounds of funding in now 8 years, and we had approximately 25 projects per round. Those projects got a maximum of €47,500 per funding. We have funded 387 projects in all of those rounds. The last one is the 16th round, which will be ending this month. And we spent a total, or we could grant a total of €16.6 million in funding for those projects. And for all of those 16 funding rounds, we received over 4,000 applications in total, and we've read them all. The idea of Prototype Fund is to have a lightweight funding structure that allows a maximum of people to participate in it. So we fund people. We fund people or small teams, no companies, no institutions. And we, for example, have a very short application form. We give them support with the admin stuff, with the ministry, and we have little reporting.
For funders, this is a bit funder technical as a word, but we are what funders call a hands-on funder. That means we're not that funder that is going to tell you, here's a bunch of money, we like your project, and in 2 years you report and have fun. And then we'll find a bunch of holes in your report and ask you a lot of questions. What we do is that we're closely in touch with the people we fund all the time. We do regular short updates per email. We have a chat platform. We do one-on-one calls when needed. We check that everything's going all right. We offer extra coachings with coaching partners, thematic workshops about how to build a brand around a product, like logo, colors, etc., or how to build a community, or how to set up a company if you want that. We don't think it's necessary, but some projects can use it. We also try to put grantees in touch with each other.
Yeah, and besides this, the focus is on giving the people as much space as possible for them to experiment. This means, for example, our payments are not milestone-based, but they are based on the hours the people worked. So if they have a certain milestone where they have issues, where it takes longer than usual, that's not a problem because they get the pay for the hours they worked in it, no matter what. And that makes it possible for them to keep working on it without getting in financial trouble. We also encourage them to change the planned milestones if they see that it doesn't make sense anymore, if they have better ideas, for example, because they got user feedback or they encountered some other issues during the explorative work.
And last but not least, we always call ourselves a learning program. Like, officially, we're a research program. I've said that in the Q&A if you've been here for a few hours. So we're funded by the ministry to research how to fund open source and what the trends in open source are. And by doing that, we also can fund free and open source projects. And because we keep doing this research, we also get a lot of feedback. And so we keep updating the program and the way we fund and the way we support projects, because they keep telling us what we could do better. And we have this constant loop of changing the program and editing and making it more adapted for the project.
So to just give you a short glimpse of a few projects we funded, this one is actually the period tracking app I've talked about, which has a big focus on data security. It's called DRIP. We can recommend that.
The next one is Nextcloud Collective. So this is a Nextcloud app that came from a community that was more house project-ish, and they wanted to be able to organize themselves by having some kind of knowledge base in their Nextcloud linked with their documents, Markdown, etc. And this turned out to be very useful for Nextcloud because this is also something that has a business case where like companies can use this internally, so it made a lot of sense. And they actually now work at Nextcloud, and they can keep maintaining their little thing for their community, but also making it bigger and have like a sustainable model of continuing doing that.
Another great example is open train ticketing. Maybe you've met them also here at the railway track, I think. It's a train ticketing software for smaller railway companies, and they actually got the idea to start this project at Fosdem last year, where they heard a talk about the need to have such projects.
And last but not least, we funded something called OpenMLS. It's the first open source implementation of a standard called messaging layer security. It's been funded by pretty much every funder on the book since. And it's basically next generation signal type of encryption, to put it in a nutshell. And also we have this slide because we really
when our funding expired, we're currently in the 16th and last funding round, we knew there was time to change something up. And we've learned a lot in the past years, and we didn't feel like it would be a good idea to say, just keep doing the same and go to the ministry and make a proposal where it's just that. So we talked to other funders. We talked to the set for working on these things that are not doing code. And because it's extremely rare, and if not impossible, that one single person has all these skills doing the user interface, doing the community build-up, we need to fund teams and include team members who don't write the code. This can be designers, this can be project managers, this can be medical experts in various fields. For example, if you take the cancer app, you should have a medical expert in the team. And those people are as important as the people who write the code, and they deserve to be considered and paid as well. And something that may be very basic but is not always easy to take into account is that software communities don't stop at borders. This is particularly complicated because funds are often only available in specific geographic regions because they're from a regional private funder, or they come from the government, and that often doesn't work for teams who are in different countries. And if you fund only part of the team, that can create imbalances because some people have more time to spend on the project, they have more hours they can work, while the rest may be in another region, and that can prevent the project from running smoothly. And as already said, while some people that are getting funded already have a wide network, they have a lot of expertise, are a part of communities, not everyone is. And a lot of people in innovation funds like ours are just getting started in the field and are just getting started with their project. And providing them only money doesn't work for the project to be successful, but they need coaching, they need opportunities to talk to the right people, to talk to experts and share the knowledge. And having all this in the funding structure can make a huge difference in the success of a project.
We didn't put it first in the list, but it's actually the one answer that we get the most when I ask people, what do you need from us? And they always say, more time. We didn't put it first because we're not sure it's actually the most important one, or that there is a limit to how much more time people need. And time can't solve anything, right? Like, if you don't have the expertise for various things, having more time is not going to make it. We still should acknowledge that our funding times as innovation programs are mostly rather short times. In our case, it's been 6 months for the last 8 years. And in a context of where there is lack of support, like, it's not that easy to get the next fund. It's not that easy to get to a, like, second stage type of funding where, like, you have a prototype, but it kind of doesn't really work that well. That kind of funding is the worst funding to try to find, because there is not really someone who wants to pick up that work. And in that context, then you start thinking about more time actually makes sense. And we're thinking more than code and more time combined at the same time, and having second stage fundings where it's something that is not only coding is very helpful to projects. And in the end, like, something that is also needed in that time thing is long-term planning. We get so many people who come and say, on the first day, I have 6 months now to build my project, and on the last day, they say, now I have to figure out how to make it sustainable. And that is something where, like, funders need to support projects and tell them on the first day, this is not going to work. You have to think about this. And we don't really care if, like, you want to start a company, if you want to, like, build a community around the project, if it's something that is going to be integrated in Linux kernel and you don't want to touch it ever again. It doesn't matter, but you have to figure out what works for you. And you have to start to do that first, because reaching out to funders, reaching out to communities, reaching out to people who can support you takes time. And I think the last thing is, we have said we're quite hands-on, and that contradicts it a little bit, but funding structures need to be as flexible as possible. It's some, like, funder problem that we always think we can micromanage people into doing the things they should do. And mostly, as we said, they are the experts. They know what they should do, and trying to have funds that are as flexible as possible within the frames of course, it's government funding, etc. in our case. At least being open to feedback and try to adapt the fund to your community, to the people you fund, that's one really important point.
So we don't think we all got it figured out, and there's many different ways to build helpful funding structures. But if you're interested in how we set up the continuation of Prototype Fund, you can take a look at our website where we have it all written up. We have a timeline. You can find it under new.prototypefund.de.
Yeah, there's one last thing we want to say. We're super happy to talk about Prototype Fund and our program and our grantees and all that stuff. But one thing we're, like, super, super happy about is when people come reach out to us and say, I want to help setting up a new funding structure in my country, in my community. It doesn't need to be government funded. There are, like, different ways to do it. Prototype Fund has been copied in Switzerland. It's called the Prototype in Switzerland. It has the same logo as us. It has the same vibe, but it's not funded by a government. It's funded by a local, it's called funded by Mercator in Switzerland. Who is a foundation, and other funds have been funded, built on Prototype Fund type models in totally different ways where you wouldn't recognize the influence. But, like, taking that kind of, I want to have a lightweight funding structure and I want to somehow make it work for the system in which I work, for the community in which I work, is great. Like, we don't think we should keep growing. We think we need a lot of small funders that kind of complete each other. We need the big ones to pick up big projects, but we need also funders that are adapted to different needs. And I recently went to Paris to Open Source Experience to talk about the Prototype Fund, and one of the things that stayed in my mind is that at some point there was people talking about the Sovereign Tech Agency and the Prototype Fund and whatever, and someone from France was like, why is all the Germans doing that, and where are our funds? We're happy to help if someone is interested, and not only in France. So if you know any opening, it doesn't need to be government, but, like, to set up that kind of lightweight fund, we've done it for a very long time. We've made a lot of mistakes. We've learned a lot, and we're happy to share. Because in the end, we don't want a single point of failure. Trump is back. The Open Tech Fund died last time when he was there. In the last weeks, the first open source grants have been cancelled or half cancelled. It's complicated. And we need also these big structures like OTF or the Sovereign Tech Agency, but we need to set up resilience structures so one of us can fail if there is a political problem, if there is a funder that stops funding projects. And we need to be able to keep the money flowing, whatever happens in open source. also NLNet, like there has been all these questions about whether and how they keep existing. Like it keeps happening, and there will be these pushes, and we need to build these resilient structures. If you want to get in touch, whether it is to build the new prototype or not, whatever you want to call it, or if you're interested in our project or whatever, you can get in touch with us, and we're always happy to support as much as we can. Thank you. I think we have 5 minutes for questions. Yes. So this is about how our criteria for choosing projects we fund evolve. So one thing that is a really big change is that we had 4 areas of funding, security, infrastructure, data literacy, and civic tech. And from now we'll be focusing only on infrastructure and security, thinking our type of funding structure is not adapted to support projects that are very heavily content-based, like stuff where you have to either scrape a lot of data and keep it up to date, because that keeping up to date question is not something we can solve with the funding that ends and where we have no solution to keep going. I think the rest is like very soft and we probably don't notice it, but we've been learning like that when people are very vague in some like answers in applications, for example, what's your target audience and how you reach to them. Yeah. All the users of the internet and our go-to conferences, we are very cautious with that kind of stuff, and probably more than we used to be, where we said, okay, let's give this project a chance anyway. We have a question there? So technically, we don't decide who's fund. So what did government try to influence how we fund projects? So technically, we don't even decide. The ministry does. So our projects are not funded by us. They're funded by the ministry. Our jury makes a list of projects that are suggested for funding, and the ministry approves them. In fact, I think twice a project was not funded. One of them was compliance reasons. The ministry was not allowed to fund it. And one of them was a bit more of a content issue that went very public. There is a lot of tweets about it. And there was a discussion about like how this happened. It was a bit too complicated for now. So it happened, but very, very few times. Yes, I have a question there. Okay, so that's like a question about who we fund. Does the project needs to be somehow related to the German market, and does the person need to be in Germany? The person is a complicated thing. If you're applying alone, you need to be in Germany. If you're applying with a team, some members of the team can be in other EU countries, but you should be somehow able to start a lightweight German company called the GBR. Very technical, but like basically Europe teams is fine. With does it need to have something to do with Germany? Not directly, as in we funded a lot of projects with global reach, but if someone comes for like, this is a project for a very specific country based in a totally different continent, then the ministry is going to be like, can it be a bit of a broader use case? But otherwise, we've been funding projects that were like global projects. One short question. Yes. So if we collaborate with programs on other continents, we don't know a lot of programs that have similar scopes, but we do know a few, and we are in touch with them.
The question is, can I collaborate with you, because we have funding to do it with low middle income countries.
Okay, so you want to let's have coffee and talk about it. We always like to see, to check, like, of course we are in the this German structure, and there are things we can do and cannot do, but learning from each other and that kind of stuff, always. I think very, very short, 5 words question, something. Does the ministry take shares in company that have been started? No, not at all, because we fund research projects. So people have been researching whether it's possible or not to do that. The ministry is actually really happy if people start a company. And the only thing is they need to have a ministry logo on their website, because it's been funded by the ministry, and it needs to be open source, and therefore then the ministry lets you do whatever you want. Thank you, everyone. I think we're out of time.